So.
You either know you have an issue with somebody, you think maybe you have an issue, you're not sure. And an issue can just be something's not right. It doesn't necessarily mean you feel like strong resentment. Maybe it's just not right. Something's wrong. So you can pick that person. Some people need to forgive themselves. They say, most important person to forgive is myself. So you can pick yourself. And if you don't have a person, or you're not sure if you have a person, and it's not yourself, then in order to go through the processes, you need to pick an imaginary person. And how that works is, you imagine if somebody did something to you or to a loved one, or to your country or to your community, you imagine what it would be that you would find difficult or impossible to forgive. So you imagine a scenario, like someone kidnapped and molested your daughter. Say, I couldn't forgive that person. Or did worse things to your daughter. Or to your husband, your wife. Like, so you imagine a scenario in which you would feel it would be impossible to forgive a person. And then that's an imaginary person. You give them a name. And that person, and then you at least can apply the knowledge and processes we do to that person. Otherwise, it'll be too theoretical for you. But in most cases, people have somebody. Right? Most people have somebody. The person who cheated you, the person who lied to you, the person who betrayed you, the person who abused you. Most people have someone like that. A lot of people have more than one. But if you have more than one, I'll let you decide who you want to choose.
Only one.
By choosing one, you'll be able to learn how to deal with the others sometimes. By choosing one, the others will. So I just have to do one more thing. And so you could be thinking who that person is. Okay? And when you have that person, the next thing is, I want you to find somebody who will be your partner. Probably easier to look to the right or left of you. But if there's odd numbers, we'll make adjustments. You find somebody who's going to be your partner, and then we'll do some things with the partner. Okay? I think you have an odd number here, 5. But maybe Vyas could come forward. Two. So you're all good here. What about? I'll tell you what to do. Yeah.
Language issue.
English? No.
I know, but I prefer to do it in English because
most. So he does English. It's good. Okay. Okay, you want to, we're going to do a little exercise, but I want to preface it first. I want to give a definition of what resentment is, what forgiveness is, and what forgiveness is not. So, the word resentment comes from the French. And re means again, and how do you say feel? Sentier?
Sentir.
It comes from ressentir, which means to feel something again, to experience something again. So I will tell you a true story. And this story was told to us during one of our forgiveness workshops. One young lady said that when she was a kid, her brother took a brick and hit her in the head. So she was so upset that he did that, and she went to her mother with the brick that he used to hit her in the head, and she showed her mother what he did, and she took the brick and hit herself in the head 3 times. This is what he did, and he did it really hard like this, and it really hurt when he went like this. So resentment means to re-experience an event of the past and to feel the pain of the past in the present. Does that make sense? To relive it. And often the pain of the present feels worse than the pain of the past because your life has been hurt by it. So what you're feeling in the present may even feel worse than the pain of the past. So when you hold resentment, you have an event of the past that's affecting you today. And the event of the past only exists in your memory of it. If you had amnesia, you wouldn't remember it. It would not affect you. So the past, as they say, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but the past only exists in the present. Or there's actually no such thing as the past because the past only exists in our mind. But the past just went by. It no longer exists. Right?
I apologize for the early question.
Yes.
But it's just in my mind all the time. Why do you forgive someone?
Why? You will find out, don't worry. We'll make it clear. All right. He's asking why to forgive. Well, it's appropriate to this discussion because if you want to go somewhere, let's say you want to go to Tel Aviv, but there's somebody behind you that's hooked onto your car, and so you try to turn left, but they have a rope on your car and they won't let you. And their car is pulling you another direction. What would be intelligent is to get out and take the rope off, right? So when you have resentment towards another person, you have an invisible emotional rope connected to them. And that rope is influencing the decisions that you're making about your life. So then rather than proceed in your life in the way you want, this is having an effect on you, number one. Number two, you can never be happy hating somebody. Or having ill feelings, having negative thoughts to someone is a low level of consciousness. And thoughts affect your behavior, it affects your emotional state, it affects your physical state. So it's actually toxic. Hate is a toxic thought, right? Resentment is a toxic thought, and it has toxic effects. I have a lot of research on my computer, we don't have time, about the toxic effects on the health of thoughts and the relationship even between cancer and resentment. We read it in the last workshop where a doctor had put people through a forgiveness process, people who had cancer, and when they went through the process, the cancer had shrunk after they forgave. So it's bad physically, it's bad emotionally. And from the spiritual point of view, it's very, very interesting. Because relationships with other people affect your relationship with God. It's not that, well, this guy is stupid, and this guy is a jerk, and everybody knows it, and I hate him. And it's okay for me to feel that way, and I'm very spiritual. It doesn't work like that. You may want it to work like that. You may think it will work like that. But our relationships with one another affect our relationship with God. You know, when Jesus was on down the street here doing his sermon, that mountain there, it's not far, how far is that? Over there, how far is that?
Almost 50
years. Yeah, when he was doing his sermon on the mount, what mountain is it, Sinai? What is it?
No.
That was Moses, all right.
Mount of Cimarron,
what is it?
It's like happiness, mountain, something like this.
Yeah. So when he was doing a sermon on the mount, down the street here, he was saying, if someone slaps you in the face, what did he say? If someone slaps you in the cheek, give them the other cheek. Amazing. So every spiritual tradition teaches that you should love the people who hate you. It's hard enough for us to love the people that love us. Right? Isn't it? Isn't it? So what a challenge is it to love the people who hate you? But it's transforming. If you can take energy which is negative that comes to you and it comes back as positive, it transforms you and it transforms the other person. Right? This man named Stephen Hawkins did a study, and he studied consciousness, and he studied vibrational frequencies of consciousness. And they studied that low consciousness, things such as hatred and negative thoughts, vibrate very slow. And higher thoughts, thoughts where people are thinking more peaceful thoughts, more kind thoughts, honest thoughts, more affectionate thoughts, vibrate higher. And that people who have that higher vibration, when they come into a group, it elevates the group. And people have lower vibration when they come, and they can. Right? And so they did this study in corporations, and they said, in corporations, you only needed one high vibrational person, and it would uplift the company, the consciousness. Because if you work in corporations, you know a lot of what goes on in corporations is competition. People want to get up above their coworkers, so they're not really helping, but they're pushing them down out of the way. So one higher vibrational person uplifts the whole place. So then you have to ask yourself, what do you want to be? A person who uplifts the place or keeps things down? Because if you're an uplifting person, you're uplifting yourself also. Now, here's the best answer to your question. It's a really interesting definition of forgiveness. The problem underlying your question is, when somebody hurts you, you can't find a reason to forgive them because they've done something unforgivable, right? Why would you forgive something unforgivable? It doesn't make sense, especially in our society today where we're so competitive. Where you grow up, and what do your parents say? Get ahead, get ahead. Don't let them take advantage of you. Is that what you heard growing up? That's what I heard. I mean, I heard things like, don't be too nice, because someone's going to take advantage of you. You've got to be on guard. It's a competitive world. It's a dog-eat-dog world. So then, in that frame of reference, why would you want to forgive somebody who's done something to you which is unforgivable? Doesn't make any sense. And this is the exact point. From the material perspective, it doesn't make any sense. If they slap you on this cheek, give them, here, come over here. This cheek is still fresh. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense, does it? But from the spiritual point of view, there's sense to it. Because what's the spiritual point of view? The spiritual point of view is people may be unkind, but as a spiritual person, you're kind. So you're not tit for tat, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. That's not how you respond. That's a spiritual person. Materially, we're taught to respond the way people, oh, he's very nice to us. They gave me a gift. What do you think? You know, I have to give him a gift on his birthday. Right? Isn't that how you think? You note in your mind all the people who gave you gifts because you know they're going to expect a gift from you because they gave one to you. So that's how we operate. And we also note it when people are unkind. And we wouldn't mind sometimes being unkind to them to get back. One of the ways we do this when we carry a grudge or resentment, one of the ways we're unkind is by talking ill about them to others. And if you want to be really unkind, you let them know you're doing that. And if you want to be really unkind, you let them know if they ever do it again, you're going to tell the newspaper or television or the world about what they did. And you can hold them in your hand. Right? So it's a good opportunity to get back at somebody. But if you're practicing spiritual life, or if you want to elevate your consciousness to a higher level, then you start thinking, what is the right thing to do? Which a lot of people don't think that way. They don't think what is right. Or you want to take it higher, what does God want me to do? As we know, a lot of people conceive what God wants them to do to fit it in to what they want to do. And then they can get the stamp that God wants me to do it. And then they go crazy, doing all kinds of horrible things. And this is history, right? We've seen that, right? So, what kind of person do you want to be? One who retaliates hate with hate or hate with love? How do you solve the problem of hate? Well, here's an easier way to look at it. How do you get rid of darkness? Light. Can you get rid of darkness with darkness? No. So when someone hates you and you hate back, what are you doing? What are you fighting back the darkness with? With darkness. Now, if there's no people in the world that are going to fight back with light, what's going to happen to the world? If there's if there's none of those 1% walking around the world, what's going to happen to the world? There's a story in a book called Mahabharata. How many of you heard of Mahabharata? Mahabharata is it's an ancient history, and Bhagavad Gita, which is the famous book that Lord Krishna spoke, that is in the Mahabharata. And there's a discussion there about forgiveness in the Mahabharata. And the wife of a king is telling the king that you have been cheated and you should retaliate. And the king said, now is not the time to retaliate. And she was very angry. And he said, if we act on anger, it will not be good. He said, you wait. And at the right time, we will do the right thing. And we will be victorious. And then this just went on. This was a long discussion. And in the end of the discussion, he said, if everyone retaliates with the way they've been treated, ill-treated, he said, everyone will destroy one another. The world will be destroyed. He said, but we can't retaliate how we were treated. But we have to do what is right. Not as in Sanskrit, it's called dharma. We have to do what is dharmic. We have to do the right thing. And he did that. And what was the result? Everything came to him because he did the right thing. So spiritual people, when darkness comes to them, they turn on the lights. People who are not spiritual or not spiritually developed, or even people who are spiritual, who get out of line with their own spiritual beliefs, when darkness comes to them, they fight back with more darkness. Have you ever done that? You've done it. We've done it so many times, we can't even count how many times we've done it. So St. Francis of Assisi, the great Catholic monk, he said, O Lord, wherever there is hatred, let me sow, who knows what he said? Love. Wherever there is darkness, let me sow light. Let me be an instrument of your peace. So that's the spiritual perspective. So there was one writer, he gave a definition, and this will, I think will answer your question. He gave a definition of forgiveness. He says, it says, it's to forgo the right that you have for resentment because you were hurt. So in a sense, you have a right to feel resentment because you were hurt. You know, and all your friends will say, yes, you have a right to be hurt. Look what they did to you. He cheated you. They got you kicked out of the office. They abused you, whatever it was. To forego the right you have for resentment and offer the kindness that that person doesn't deserve. You deserve resentment and they don't deserve kindness, but you forego your own resentment and you offer them the kindness they don't deserve. That's what forgiveness is. So forgiveness is very high on the scale of consciousness, isn't it? It's a very high level, right? Very high, yes.
I don't want to go to political...
No, that's okay.
But the idea that if somebody, a neighbor from you, cross the border or send missile, mm-hmm. missiles or
right.
things like this...
you can't turn the other cheek, right?
So... You need to be practical.
Right, yeah. Let me answer the question in a second. It's an important question, and I'm glad you asked it. I just want to follow my logic. I'll say one more thing, and then I'll answer that. It fits in also. So
it's very easy with relationships and so on.
Yeah, but when you're
doing, you are responsible
yeah.
about it.
Yeah. Okay.
Security.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. So. I've taught forgiveness for many years, and along the way of teaching it, I realized one thing. That in many cases, forgiveness is illogical. It doesn't make sense. And when we get stuck, when we can't forgive, there's a lot of people say, I'd like to forgive, but I can't. Right? We get stuck on the logic of it, because it doesn't make sense. Because the logical thing is not to forgive. And so, if you want to forgive, but you're looking for logic to it, you're often going to get stuck in the logic. Because it won't make sense to you. Because sometimes, when you're offering kindness for hatred, it's just like, it goes against everything that makes sense to you. And it goes, as I said, it goes against a lot of how we were trained to deal with people. Right? So now it's time for the story. Who wants to hear a story? This is the scorpion. A lot of you have heard it. It's the scorpion and the sadhu. Sadhu is in India. Sadhu means a saintly person. Sadhu. Sadhu, saint. Saint. And scorpion is a spider that bites. Right? Scorpion's a spider?
Yeah.
Now, what is it? Kind of? Looks like a spider?
Half crab, half spider.
Half crab. How big is a scorpion?
We have scorpions.
Yeah. So, if you pick a scorpion up, what will he do? Bite you. Okay. So, the sadhu is walking during the rainy season in India. It rains for like what I was told. Sometimes it rains all day, every day, week after week after week after week, it doesn't stop. So there's little ponds everywhere that don't normally exist. And he's walking through one of these ponds, and the scorpion is there, and he wants to help the scorpion out of the pond. So he picks him up, and then the scorpion bites him. So the natural response is to put it down. But he picks him up again because he wants to help him, and he keeps getting bitten. So the whole way he's crossing the little pond, he's picking it up and putting it down and getting bitten many, many times. And some man is watching him do that, and he can't understand why he's doing that. It doesn't seem logical. So when he finally gets to the shore, the scorpion gets to the shore, he says, "Sadhu, what's happening here?" Or as we say in America, "Yo, dude, what's going down?" I'm introducing you to American culture. Immediately, your consciousness. Right? "Yo, my man. What's up, my man? What's up with the Scorpio?" So the sadhu, he's reflecting how he will explain this. So he said, "Well, every time I picked up the scorpion, it would bite me. So I thought, this is a scorpion's nature. It will bite. And even though I'm trying to help him, he won't give up his nature. He won't stop biting, because that's his nature." So the sadhu said, "If it's the scorpion's nature to bite, and he won't give up his nature, even though I'm trying to help him, why should I give up my nature to help him, even though he's biting me?" You like that? In other words, if you want to elevate your consciousness, if you want to practice spiritual life, then you understand there's a certain consciousness, a certain nature that you carry with you. And a lot of people are going to bite you. So you think, okay, it's their nature to bite, but what's my nature? My nature is to serve. My nature is to be kind, whatever the qualities of a spiritual person. So that's how you respond. Our conditioned reflex is, it's okay to respond the way they responded. Right? Yes.
But let's say after some bites, he's dying. So
scorpion's dying,
no,
or the sadhu
dies?
Oh, yeah.
So he's not able to continue his serve.
Okay. It relates to his question.
Of course.
So I'll answer them both, but I just wanted to get this clear, okay? We're talking very theoretical here first. We'll get to the practical. But this is the idea that you have a certain consciousness and you understand what is the right behavior. And now the challenge is to manifest, to act in that way in all situations, because you know that's the right behavior. Isn't that a challenge? Okay, I know this is right, but other people don't treat me well, so right? That's a challenge. It's good to see you. I always remember you. Very enthusiastic. If people are nice to you, it's easy to be nice. Yes? Sometimes. If you're in a bad mood, it's even hard to be nice to people nice to you. But look at how things are in life today. It's hard to be nice to the people we should be nice to. Sometimes it's hard to be nice to your husband, or your wife, or your children. isn't it? And these are the people we should be nice to. What about being nice to the people who aren't nice to us? It's a real challenge. But it's also a way in which we can understand where our consciousness is. Because if everyone's nice to you, how will you understand where you are spiritually? But when someone is not nice to you, then it's a test. How are you going to respond? So in answer to your question, there's different levels. On one level, it's just for yourself. You're hurting yourself. Because as it is said, resentment is like drinking poison and hoping the other person will die. So the poison, you're drinking the poison in your body, but you're hoping it's going to hurt them. It doesn't hurt them. It hurts you. So on that level, it's good for you, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. You'll be better off and you'll be happier. And I've seen it many, many times. When people hold on to a grudge, it's very, very heavy. It's a heavy burden, and they're carrying it. And you can see it in their body. You can see it in their face. You can see it in their life. Sometimes it ruins people's lives because that grudge has so much effect on their present. I can't do this because this happened to me 10 years ago. And their whole life is ruined by it. So when they let go of it, their life changes because the car is not connected anymore. The car is not pushing them. I'll give you an example. Would you like to hear an example? When you drive a car, could you imagine driving your car by looking in your rearview mirror? That's how you drive. You don't look in the front, you just look in the rearview mirror. And you're going to figure out how to drive by looking behind you. How could you do that? But when we allow the past to affect our present, that's what we're doing. We're driving our life from the rearview mirror of what happened in the past. Yes?
Self-defense. I mean, you learn by this not to be hurt anymore.
Yeah, okay.
Not to fall in the same spot.
Okay. Yes and no, but it's still...
And it shouldn't hold you back, but still.
Okay, yeah, okay. You can learn. Okay, that's different though. One thing is learning, because... but one thing is still having that affect you negatively. So learning is positive. Yeah, learning is good. But that's... it's not... If you've learned from it, you're not... what we're talking about is you want to go straight, but the experience in the past is making you go left. So if you learn from the experience, you'll learn how to go straight, even straighter. But if you don't learn and it affects you, then you go left and right. You won't have full control of where you want to go. And then people will say, I would do this, but this happened in the past. So we have to tell a story about two young men whose father was a drunkard and a thief. And they grew, you imagine, growing up with your father, and you don't see him all the time because half the time he's in jail. Where's daddy? Oh, he's in jail now. When's he getting out? 3 months. Then he gets out, and 2 months later, where's daddy? He's in jail now. When's he getting out? 6 months. And they grew up like that. And half the time when they saw him, he was drunk and hanging around with people like him. So it was a bad childhood. So one of the sons ended up just like the father. And one of the sons ended up very successful. Exactly the opposite of the father. And both the sons were interviewed. And they said, how is it that you ended up like this in your life? And the first one, who was a drunkard, he said, the reason I ended up like this was my damn father was a drunkard. And he was always in jail. That was his answer. They asked the son, second son, how did you end up like this? He said, The reason I ended up like this is because my father was a damn drunkard, and he always ended up in jail. So one was driving from the rearview mirror, and one was learning from the rearview mirror. See the difference, right? So the problem with resentment, it keeps us bound in the past, and it allows us to have an excuse to fail or to blame or whatever it is you want to have an excuse for. It's a very convenient thing, because after all, somebody did an unforgivable act, so you're justified. And what we want to understand, people who are wanting to advance spiritually need to understand no resentment is justified. And now we have to get to your point, because that even makes less sense to you, right? Okay. So, you understand the word justified? Righteous. You know the word righteous? Righteous resentment. We're with the RR Club. We have righteous resentment. We're all familiar with it, right? Righteous religion. Righteous anger. Righteous... It doesn't help us. So now we have to deal with the issue of if we are physically hurt or there's a potential for us to be hurt, how does forgiveness work? Very important question. We'll give one example, not a political example, but I think it'll relate to it. Sometimes we find, I don't know in your country, but in America we find women are physically abused to such an extent that it's dangerous for them to be near their husbands because their husbands cannot control themselves. It's physically dangerous and psychologically dangerous. So in those cases, women will go to court and the judge will pass what's called a restraining order, which restrains their husband from getting within a certain range. Usually it's a mile or two or three. And if the husband is found within a mile or two or three, he can be arrested. Because it's not safe for the woman to be near him. So she takes the husband to court and gets a restraining order. And he's usually not too happy about it. That may include not seeing the kids. It may include many things. And then there may be a time limit on the restraining order. She may even prosecute him. He may even have to go to jail. I have a very close friend, and this is what happened. Her ex-husband, now ex-husband, is in jail, but he was dangerous. And she forgave him. She didn't do it because she had resentment. She did it because it was necessary to protect herself, her children, and it was the best thing for him. But in her heart, she had forgiven him for everything he had done. So what you're talking about are two things. You, your consciousness, and then what you need to do for your country, your people, to be secure. Because if you want to elevate yourself spiritually and you hate people or you hate communities or groups, it's a contradiction. You may have to deal with them, and it looks like you hate them, but you don't. The things you do may seem to be the things that a person who hates them does, but you don't hate them. It's like you punish a child, you don't hate the child. But you discipline them because it's necessary. So what's going on in your heart is one thing. And what you do practically is different. Now, sometimes it's the same. And sometimes it looks different. Another thing.
It's very difficult to distinguish.
To distinguish? Yeah. Well, like in this case, this woman, because her husband's dangerous, her forgiveness was not done to reestablish the relationship. Because a lot of people think if you forgive, the proof of your forgiving is to reestablish the relationship. Then I know I've forgiven. But just like my spiritual master, Prabhupada, would say, a saint loves everyone. He loves all living entities, but he doesn't embrace tigers because it's dangerous. Right? So loving a tiger and embracing a tiger. I love the tigers. I'm not going to go out and shoot them. I'm not going to throw rocks at them. But I'm not going to embrace them either.
And when you are being attacked by the tiger, what you are doing?
You're running as fast as you can.
This is not a full answer.
You understand that's what tigers do. They run after people and try to eat them. Your God consciousness means you see the animals as brothers and sisters. So you have to defend yourself against the tiger. You might have to shoot the tiger because he's going to eat you. But you're not going to go out and shoot a tiger who's not, if it's not in self-defense. You see, we have... In America, I don't know if you do this here, but in America, they have a sport, and the sport is hunting. And they hunt deer. And deer are very timid animals. So these big macho, you understand the word macho?
Yeah.
The big macho men. The big rough, tough men. They go out with their big guns. And they hide in the bushes, hundreds of meters away from these poor, innocent deer. And sometimes they sit in trees and towers and they shoot these deer, the big macho men. And that's a sport. But in the history of humankind, only up until the last few hundred years, no one ever shot animals unless it was either self-defense or for food. Right? So a God-conscious person, he sees animals as brothers. So he may have to defend himself if they're attacking, but otherwise, he lets them live. So if you're a fast runner, better you run fast. If you're not, then you'll have to shoot if you have your gun with you. Or better, don't go near a tiger or a crocodile. Okay, good. So now, before we do our exercise, I have to tell you something else. Should I tell you? I have to ask you a question. It's a really good question. And I know you'll get the answer right. Even though it's a very difficult question, I know you'll get the answer right. When you squeeze an orange, what comes out of the orange?
Juice.
Juice. I knew you'd get it right. What kind of juice?
Orange juice.
Why?
Because you squeeze an orange.
Because you squeeze an orange. You don't get mango juice from oranges.
This is nature.
It's a nature. That's what's inside. Orange juice. Right? When you squeeze an orange, you get orange juice because orange juice is inside. Not pineapple juice, not mango juice, not grape juice. Maybe in the spiritual world, but not here. Let's say in the spiritual world, tree can give you any fruit you want. You get orange juice because that's what's inside. So when you are squeezed, what comes out of you? What comes out?
Poison juice.
Is that true? Poison juice comes out of it? Sometimes? So when we are squeezed, what comes out of us is inside of us. Now, why this is important, I mean, this is really a transformational concept. When we are hurt, we get angry. And when we get angry, generally what we do is blame the fact that we're angry on the person who hurt us. right? Isn't that normal? Why are you angry? Because this guy at work is such a jerk. He did this. That's right. Because this guy cut me off. They have you don't. I don't know if you have it here in America. They have road rage. You know what road rage is? People get very angry in their cars. Somebody goes in front of them. Someone just wrote me. She said she lives in England, and she said people carry weapons and they have fights over parking spaces in front of their homes. Can you imagine? Here? Crazy, huh? So, I'm angry. Why am I angry? It's your fault. Nothing to do with me. I'm fine. I'm like the greatest guy in the world. It's your fault. That's why I'm angry. Now, the person you're blaming is not responsible for how you feel. Right? Who's responsible for how you feel? That person or? Yes, but we think they're responsible. You're responsible for how I feel. You acted that way, and I'm angry. It's your fault. Very common in marriages, right? You blame the other person for how you feel.
You get a reflection from the other people, not only yourself.
Yes, exactly. So if you turn it around, and then you say, I am responsible for how I feel, not the other person. Wow. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? I thought they were responsible. It gets worse. My mother's responsible for how I feel. Right? This is how she raised me. So now I'm a complete wreck. It's my mother's fault. Right? Let me ask you a question. If I got your mother and I put her through therapy and she's no longer crazy, would that make you any better? No, you'd still be crazy. So, forgive. Another one definition of forgiveness. There are many. Is to be take responsibility for how you feel, for your own feelings. And it's very interesting because sometimes we say the wrong thing to somebody and they become upset with us. And then we hear through a friend that so and so is upset because of what you said. And sometimes you'll think to yourself and you'll say, well, I didn't know I was responsible for how that person feels. I didn't know it was my responsibility. So you have to apologize. Okay, I'll apologize, but I didn't know it was my responsibility. Because they should take responsibility for how they feel. Right? So forgiveness means to take responsibility for how you feel. Okay. He hurt me. All right. How will I respond? Did you know you have a choice how you respond? Did anyone ever tell you that? When you're getting angry, does it seem like you have a choice? No. Well, of course I'm mad. Look what they did. Anybody would be mad. Have you ever said that? As soon as you say, anyone would be mad, you've given up your responsibility for how you're going to respond. Right? And you're validating and rationalizing your anger. Right? It's justified. I'm justified. Okay, maybe you are justified, but is it right? Is it dharmic? Is that going to help anything? It's a very high way of thinking. Right? Yes? The way I feel today, the way I process today, is not the fault of anybody. It's me. I have to take responsibility. If I stop driving from the rearview mirror, things will get better. I'll understand. I read something amazing. It's a book by Scott Peck. He wrote a book called, who knows the book? The famous book?
Yeah.
The Road Less Traveled. Then he wrote a sequel to that book. And I was at a friend's house. Is it like, I don't know the name of it, but The Road Less Traveled. Does anybody know? There was a sequel, again, or something. So I opened the book up, The Road Less Traveled by Scott Peck. I opened the book up and I read one sentence in the book. He said, sometimes adults act like children. And they think, for the moment, I'm acting childish. And he said, no, that's not what's happening. Not for the moment they're acting childish. He said, they never grew up. When I read that, I looked at my life and I realized I have acted as an adult in childish ways for many, many years. I never actually grew up. I was still acting like a child because I wasn't taking responsibility for my feelings. I was blaming others for my failures. And it was a very big realization for me that many of us act like children. Right? Think about it. When you respond sometimes to certain situations, think about what he said. It's powerful. It's not that we're adults acting like children. We're adults that never grew up. I've seen many people like this. And I'm sure you have also. In dealings. And they just walk away. They can't deal with something. Just like a little kid. And these could be very big people. They could be running big international corporations. You know, the guy whose ego is oversized, it's only my way, and if you don't do it my way, get out of here. That's very childish, isn't it?
Frank Sinatra, do it his way.
What?
Frank Sinatra.
I'll do it my way, yeah. Frank Sinatra sang a song, and the main line was, I do it my way, yeah.
I
did it my way. Anyway, it's an important realization. So the two things we're talking about here. When we're hurt, we think how to respond. Am I going to respond with what came to me, or am I going to respond from another level? And am I going to take responsibility for my response, or am I going to blame it on someone else? When you hate, it's a very, very low consciousness. Very low. So it's always better for us to focus on what we are for as opposed to what we are against. Especially if you're practicing spiritual life, you have a lot of good things to be for. Right? You're looking up for spiritual elevation. So there are a lot of positive things to look for in your life, a lot of positive goals in your life, right? Why would you want to focus on what you're against? The people you don't like, the people you hate. It brings you down. Right? That makes sense? And when you focus on what you're against, what happens? You have a lot of problems. Right? And they tend to get bigger the more you focus on them. Now, here's another thing that's very interesting. How you see a situation is how you will respond to it. Your understanding of it. Right? Gunavatar introduces me. He says, Mahatma is the greatest thing that ever happened to Israel. Everyone's like, oh. Can I get your autograph? So you have a perception. You have an experience of me based on your understanding, based on how you see me. You see me as somebody good. So you feel very good about me. Parshabhanavi gets up and says, no, 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 that's not true. I can tell you a lot of things that he's done in the past. And she is this whole list of horrendous, horrible things I've done. Does that change your perception of me?
No.
You love me too much. Because you know, but if you actually believed it.
I know that you have done many things. You're with me.
What? And she says, he's a serial killer, a thief, a child molester. Immediately you're running out to hide your children. So, I want to tell you a story. It's a really good story, and it'll illustrate this point. How you see things is how you respond, and how you see may not be true. So this is a true story. There was a young man, he was an adopted child, and he grew up with this thought that how could my mother have given me up? He couldn't figure that out, and it really upset him. So he grew up hating his birth mother. And he never talked to her, he never confronted her, but it really weighed heavy on him, how a mother could give him up. So he went through some therapy, some process, and he went and spoke to his mother and said, how could you do that? That's killed me, it's destroyed me. And she said, I was a drug addict when I gave birth to you. And the last thing in the world I wanted to do was to give you up, but it was the worst thing for you because my life was a mess. So what do you think happened when he heard that? Do you think his enmity towards his mother was dissolved? Yes, naturally. Because he's seeing a different story. The first story was he was abandoned by a horrible woman. The second story was he was saved by a loving mother. So now the story, what's ever going on, is interesting how you see it. Because there's a funny statement. Would you like to hear it? Nothing means anything until you show up. What does that mean? Nothing means anything till you show up.
It's only in the mind.
Yeah, your perception is you come and you show up and based on your beliefs, your experiences, your prejudices, and so forth, your knowledge, your assessment, you show up and figure out what's going on. Like someone could walk in here and say, what's going on? I was once giving a class, it was all women. So someone could walk by and say, what's going on? There's Mahatma with only women. You know, that's Mahatma's harem, he's going to run off with him. They could think so many things, right? I mean, who knows what they would think if they wanted. That they could think, oh, he's so kind to take time to, you know, they could think so many things. Take time to spend time with these ladies, that's nice of him. So when you show up, you figure it out. And a lot of what you figure out is based on what you're learned to believe. Right? I was in Jordan last time I came here. So I had an interesting experience in Jordan. Because if you come from America, the Muslim countries are the axis of evil. Right? That's the program that our former president gave, you know, the axis of evil in all these Muslim countries. So then you see the news, and there are these men dressed differently than Americans. They look differently than Americans, and they're carrying guns and they're shooting people. Whoa. So there's an impression, right? So I'm in Jordan at a hotel, and they invite me to the cafeteria. Nice salad bar, I eat something. And all the men that look like the terrorists on television were in the hotel. Eating with me, wearing the same clothes. They just didn't have the guns. But other than that, I'm like, whoa, maybe I should get out of here. So nothing means anything to you. So I show up, and it means like maybe this is dangerous.
You were eating with lions.
Yeah, I was in a, I mean, at any moment, maybe they'll find out. You know, I'm an American, and jump on me. I don't know. So, but someone else comes and says, "No, no, these are wonderful people. You know, they love Americans. They love you. You know." Oh, okay, okay. So my perception changes. So whatever story you have is how you react, right? So I'll tell you, you want to hear a story? This is a nice story. A story about the, who was it? His name was Kashi, and Kashi was a, he was a bear. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Bear's good enough. And Kashi was an abandoned child. He had irresponsible parents, and they left him. And near where Kashi lived were sheep. And so as a young bear, sheep, he didn't look that much different. And somehow he ended up in the sheep family, and he became one of the sheep brothers. And they raised him. So Kashi grew up with the sheep, and the sheep, they at night, they stay together, and he stayed with them, and they all cuddled together, and he was just one of them. But when he hit a certain age, he started looking a lot different than the other sheep. And he thought he was a sheep, and they thought he was a sheep. They just thought he was a weird sheep. Deformed, retarded.
What? Was it a white bear? Was it polar?
I don't know.
Not even the color.
No, he was, I think he was a brown bear. No. He was pretty nice, close to the color, yeah. So he started getting big, his face looked different. So they said, "You're weird, get out of here." And he left. So now, Kashi, no, actually it was a lion. It was a lion. Kashi was a lion. So now, he's really depressed, and he's alone in the jungle, and he's crying, he's lamenting. "I'm an ugly sheep, I'm an ugly sheep. How can I live? I'm an ugly sheep." So, some therapist, some lion therapist was walking through the jungle, said, you know, "American, yo, Kashi, what's going down?" And said, "No, it's bad, it's bad." I said, "What's bad?" He said, "Well, I'm a deformed sheep. I was rejected from the family. I'm just retarded, I'm ugly, I'm like a monster. My life's ruined." Kashi's crying, complaining, lamenting. "What are you talking about, Kashi? I'm a deformed, handicapped, retarded, ugly lion. I mean, sheep." And the therapist says, "Kashi, you're not a sheep. You're a lion." And he keeps going, "I'm a deformed, ugly lion. What are you talking about? Lion. Kashi, you're not a sheep, you're a lion." "I'm a lion? No way." "Yes, you're not a sheep, you're a lion." "You mean I'm a lion?" And he's getting all his energy back. He's coming fired up. "You mean I'm a lion? I'm the king of the jungle? I'm the man?" "Yes, Kashi." Now Kashi is like excited, empowered. He's happy, he's enlivened. What happened? Story changed. Right? Now the story changed, so he sees things differently.
The story, the software was changed.
What?
The software was changed.
Yeah, the programming, yeah. Well, the story's part of the programming. So he's got a new story. So we're hurt, somebody hurts us. What happens? A story. They did this, I was innocent, I didn't deserve it. right? And with that story, what happens? Oh, I'm so bad. And you're just lamenting and crying, and you become like Kashi, right? But if you have a different story, like you said, maybe this is a gift from God, and there's a lesson there. That's a different story. It's like Kashi realizing his lion, like he's a lion. Oh, You start to tell a different story, and what happens? How do you see it? You see it differently. And then what happens? Things start to transform. This person is not horrible. They weren't out to get me. It wasn't the worst thing in the world. But something else is going on. That's a transformation. That's how you transform resentment into forgiveness. But we're going to take a break. You know, this is a highlight, and we'll take a break now. Okay? So what are we going to do at the break? We're going to have water. We're going to have... Oh, yeah. There's so many things. A table with so many things on it. I think you're just supposed to eat the things on top of the table. The fruit and things, not anything else. Okay, so why don't we take a break till noon? That'll give you 20 minutes. There's a bathroom also you can use. Just to the right of the front door, there's a bathroom. Do you have water? Okay, so if you have any questions, you can ask me. I'll be sitting here. And otherwise, enjoy yourself.
Turn it off now.
Whoa, whoa, let me... I